One word that's been used to describe the Walt Disney Concert Hall in Los Angeles, architect Frank Gehry's latest building of undulating steel, is hot. Literally, hot. According to a consultant hired by the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors, glare reflected off parts of the hall have roasted the sidewalk to 140 degrees Fahrenheit. Reflected sunlight has also caused sunburn for people standing on the street, and it's made plastic sag. Neighbors who live across the street complain their summer air conditioning bills have doubled since the hall opened, and now the county board has ordered that parts of the building be sanded down to reduce the glare. Gehry's is not the only famous building with flaws. For example, Frank Lloyd Wright's Johnson Wax Building was praised for its beauty, but it's leaked. So what if you know us something about famous or not so famous building with flaws, give us a phone call at 800-989-8255. Martin Muller says sometimes when you push the envelope, you get some unexpected consequences. He's Senior Vice President for Special Projects at the National Building Museum here in Washington and joins us now from his office. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Did the architect Gehry consider the shininess of his building?
Oh, certainly he did. In fact, many of the panels, the stainless steel panels on the building, are brushed rather than polished stainless steel. So obviously that was a consideration in the design. I'm also sure that it was very carefully modeled in advance, but it just serves as a reminder that no matter how carefully figured out all of these things are in advance, construction is a very, very complicated process. And once you get on site, the tiniest little change in angle, the tiniest little change in construction method, or a little quirk can change the effect of a particular building dramatically.
Is it sometimes a factor of you have an architect who many regard as a genius, and the people who are hiring him to this are, maybe in this case, literally blinded to the potential flaws?
Perhaps so, but I think it's the price of experimentation. Throughout history, there have been people who've tried new things in architecture and design and construction, and sometimes as a direct result of that, things don't quite work out as intended. And, of course, the results are not always terrible. We should be reminded that there are thousands of people in Pisa, Italy, who owe their livelihoods to the unexpectedly poor soil conditions under a certain 12th-century bell tower. So every so often, there are unexpected advantages of some building failures, but it does come with the territory, I think, of experimentation, and I would hope that architects and engineers would continue to experiment and then simply learn how to diminish or minimize the negative impacts of their experimental designs.
We're talking about experimental architecture with Martin Muller. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Now, there's some other famous examples. Mr. Gehry's own building in Cleveland, a lot of people there say, guys from California didn't understand that winter lasts about 9 months in Cleveland, and there's guys who have to go out there every day and knock the icicles off that building for fear that they'll fall and hurt somebody.
Right. Again, it's a tricky thing. One of the things about Frank Gehry's work and other works of many very prominent architects, they become known for a particular style, a particular vocabulary that they enjoy using in a variety of different contexts. Sometimes some architects are more successful at adapting that vocabulary to the exigencies of a particular site, others less so. Gehry's very sculptural work, I think, most people consider to be quite beautiful, whether it's in Bilbao or Minneapolis or Cleveland, but sometimes, again, it comes with the territory. Every so often, you have to take a little bit of the bad with the good for such a visionary design.
And he's not the only one.
Oh, certainly not. Again, from Le Corbusier to Frank Lloyd Wright to many, many ancient architects, that people who tried new things, sometimes they didn't quite work out. Famously, the John Hancock Tower in Boston by the very prestigious firm of I.M. Pei and Associates was a nightmare project in many respects. And very surprising, an interesting case of unexpected consequences. This is a very slender tower right along Copley Square, Copley Plaza in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And to the surprise of many of the engineers who were looking into the failures of this building, which started popping out panes of glass not long after it was completed, the problem turned out to be excessive motion in the longitudinal direction of the plan. In other words, contrary to what you would normally expect, common sense would tell you that this very slender building would be swaying in the direction of that slender dimension. In fact, it was quite the contrary. So sometimes it takes a very, very sophisticated analysis, even in an existing building, to figure out exactly what's going on.
Let's get a caller on the line. Richard is with us from Portsmouth, Ohio.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. I'm enjoying the show as always. I attended Oberlin College, graduated in the early 80s, and I recall that our library, the architect apparently did not take into account the weight of the books. And the library was renowned, of course, as is the college, for having, I think, over a million volumes. As a consequence, the building is sinking and has been sinking for a number of years, and it is aptly named the Mudd Library.
M-U-D-D, I assume.
M-U-D-D, yes.
You know, sir, I have to say I have heard that very story about seven different university libraries, including my own alma mater, Tulane University. So I have to say I think that's something of an urban legend. I've heard it about MIT, Brown University, so many of them. I think there's it's just one of those that has sort of gotten into the annals of campus tours around the country. And so I'd actually have to question that and wonder if there's, in fact, some other thing going on behind that story in this particular case as well.
Well, I dare not tell you the names of the administration buildings because they're a little off color. But one was named Cox and one was named Peters. And they, of course, were named after the people that had been at one time in the administration of the college. That is not a legend. I do recall, however, that I thought that the building was being propped up at some point, but it may indeed not be true.
All right, Richard, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
I can tell you that the interior designer at NPR's previous offices on M Street was from Southern California, arrived to design the facilities in the summertime and neglected to put in closets for people to hang their winter coats. So there are some problems that do crop up.
It's certainly true, and it's a very complicated endeavor. Designing a building or an interior, taking into account all of the little bits and pieces, it's a very challenging thing to do, and I always marvel at the architects who do it particularly successfully.
Martin Muller, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Martin Muller, Senior Vice President for Special Projects at the National Building Museum in Washington, D.C. He joined us from his office there. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan.